is.
What are you doing that stupid trickery crap for?
Is Felger and Mass.
The continued ish.
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
Ground ball to short. Semien taking his time, fires a strike, and that's the ball game. Red Sox go quietly here in the ninth inning. No fireworks in this one. 6-5, the final score, as the A's take game number one of this three-game series. Sox now fall a half game out of first place because the Yankees were idle.
And that's how we're going to begin today, folks. We're going to do some Red Sox to begin this program. It's Felger and Maz. How you doing, everybody? We're coming to you from the Garden, our Star Market broadcast studios, in advance of Cavs-Celtics Game 2, which you can catch tonight here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Plenty of basketball, plenty of Celtics coming up, including Celtics owner Wick Grosbeck. He'll join us here in studio at the Garden. So we're looking forward to that. So we thought we'd squeeze in some baseball to begin the program. Maz, you good with that?
Sure, by all means.
Okay, let's squeeze it. Do you start last night? So there were two things that – there's only one thing that frustrated me last night as I watched that game. Good portion of that game. Andrew Benintendi. I know you've been on him, and I guess I'm not blaming him for the loss, but I saw him mamby-pamby it into the wall in center field, so he gets to start in center. I saw mamby-pamby a ball into a triple.
And mamby-pamby is the right word.
In center field. Pussyfoot it would be another word that I would use. He sort of pussyfooted it into the wall for a triple, which led to a run, which – you know, you lost by a run. And then I think next inning or two innings later, he comes up second and third, nobody out, and pops up. And I just sort of, I know you guys have been on him a little bit on the baseball reporters. And I sort of watched the game, and I sort of watched him, and I said, huh, maybe he's bugging me too. Should he be? Should I start with that?
Yes. Yes, Andrew Benintendi should be bugging you. So again, like, we're now a couple of years into this. Right? I mean, he's now effectively 2 years in the big leagues. He came up halfway through 2016. He had a full year last year, was in contention for the Rookie of the Year award. And you sort of look at him this year and you say, you expect some sort of growth. You expect some sort of jump. Has there been a more disappointing guy in the team than Andrew Benintendi when you get right down to it? So he's batting 255. He's hitting, I think it's 158 against left-handed pitching. And I'll give you the exact number. It is. It's exactly 158. Okay, 6-for-38 against left-handed pitching with 14 strikeouts. Ugh. 14 strikeouts. So with a guy who is picked as high as he was in the draft.
Where was it? 7 overall?
I think he was number 7 overall. Okay, he was a high first-round pick. So what do we have here, a platoon player? A guy that can't play against left-handed pitching, and then you put him in center field, which, by the way, he should be able to play.
No question.
Okay? He played center field in college. Shies away from the wall on a ball hitting the 379-foot marker and cost you a run.
I just didn't like the way he went after it. I don't know. There was something about the way he
went. He wussed out.
There was something about the way he went after that. Not that he didn't get it. And, you know, Maz, even the batting average and, those things will come and go. He's a good hitter. He should be a good hitter. Like, okay, I didn't like the way he went after the ball in center field.
Well, yeah. Go back to his first season, the playoff series in Cleveland. He's kind of a butcher out in the outfield sometimes, and he's bad on the base paths. Like, he lacks focus. It happens.
Okay, see, when I think of Andrew Benintendi, and, folks, the phones are open. Again, if you want to jump in on Red Sox, now's your chance, because there's going to be a lot of Celtics as we go forward today. 617-779-0985. When I think of Andrew Benintendi in the outfield, I think about the play he made in Tampa. Do you remember the catch he made in Tampa?
Sure.
Where he goes balls to
over
the wall. And, you know, catches it over, like, that picnic area in left field in Tampa. And I don't know. Is he now? I mean, the way he went after that ball and then the way he went after the ball last night, so like that doesn't seem like the same guy. I don't know. Has he gotten too cool for school? I mean, I don't know. I don't know what it is. It something bugged me about the way he went after that ball last night.
Okay, so the ball drifted a little, right? You're talking, and it ended up being a triple. But honestly, he didn't look like he was humping it after the ball the whole time. He kind of drifted with it, and then the ball went to the base of the wall, and he misplayed it, frankly. I don't know any other way to say it. And I'm getting a little agitated about him, because for a guy that gets the hype he gets and the way he acts, I don't think he's accomplished jack yet when you get right down to it. And he sucks on the bases on top of it, which pisses me off. So I look at a guy with a lot of ability and a lot of hype who in the last, and this goes back to the end of last season, because he didn't finish the end of last year very well. So I go now to how many months has it been since he really played well? So I look at him and I'm getting agitated because he does act, he's got big league-itis. I mean, you talk about a guy who is the poster boy for all of the negative stereotypes of a big league ball player, and Benintendi's got it.
Like, what do you mean?
Just the...
I mean, the read on him coming out of Double A is that he was a cocky a-hole, but that kind of benefited his game. But you guys bitching about this, my question to you is, so you want Jackie Bradley Jr. back in then?
No.
No.
So then what's the solution?
No. Play no better.
Yeah, get your head out of your ass.
Yeah, play better.
So believe me, I don't want Jackie Bradley in there. Jackie Bradley should be sitting. Andrew Betty should make that play. And I don't know, it just... I've heard you guys get on him a little bit, and it sort of struck me last night watching him.
I mean, he hit .238 in the final month of the year last year. He had a good August, but he hit .222 in July. So overall, in the second half of the season last year, he hit .261. He's hitting .255 now. A bit, you know, he gets treated like he's in the same class as Betts and Bogarts and sort of the high-level prospects that were in the system before he was. And so, and the other thing is, I'm sorry, the base running's a big thing with me. He's got his head wedged between his butt cheeks half the time he's on the bases. Half the time. And for a guy who allegedly is a natural baseball player with a sweet swing, he feels to me like he's downright clueless half the time he's out there. So I don't know what the guy's problem is, but they need more out of him. Okay, they need more out of him.
Yeah, that part I won't argue with you with, because defensively and on the base paths, he drives me nuts. But for me, mostly, he's here to hit. So I prefer him more than Bradley, and I don't know what the other option is right now. And I don't know if Cora or anybody else is really going to get on his case. I mean, he's hitting seven straight games. He had three in Toronto over the weekend. Like, you need his bat in there, so I don't really know what the hell you want to happen right now.
No. So listen,
for him not to suck?
I'm not on the manager.
I'm not telling you to bench him. I'm on him.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I'm not on the manager. I'm on the player, Murray. So the player needs to play better, and the player needs to stop acting like he's God's
like
gift
he's
to
the
game.
Cat's ass.
He really is.
Good luck, because I mean, I think that's been an issue ever since he came up.
I mean, I feel like he really does strike me as an entitled, spoiled baseball brat D-bag. Like, he really strikes me as that. And I don't feel that way about Mookie Betts. So, look, baseball sort of breeds that attitude anyway. That me first, I'm bigger than the game attitude. But Benintendi's got it.
Okay, what about Porcello last night?
So Porcello's an easy one to pick on, because now you look at him in a couple of starts and you say, well, this is Porcello crashing back to earth. And in the last couple of games, the numbers have been ugly. I mean, Porcello's ERA in those two games is basically 8. He's crashing back to earth. And you say, well, here you go, the real Rick Porcello. He's 0-1 with a 7.94 ERA in the last two outings. And I don't blame Porcello for this, really, because I think Porcello is regressing back to what he is. And Porcello is really a middle-of-the-rotation guy. And this struck me last night, because all of a sudden it feels like the Red Sox have a hole behind Chris Sale. So I look at it and say, so is that Porcello's fault now? Like, is Porcello slipping up, creates this hole behind Sale, and is that where the problem rests? And it's not Porcello. It's Price.
So this is a neat trick. Look, Emma's down on David Price as anyone, but you're blaming David Price for last night.
I'm blaming David Price for the hole that exists behind Chris Sale. And now it's becoming apparent again because Rick Porcello...
I mean, you know what I mean, Murray? Like, that's even by our standards a little bit of a reach.
Yes, now when you really spell it out that way, I am blaming David Price for Rick Porcello sucking.
For him leaving the ball up last night.
Yes. Like,
repeatedly.
So again, but again, I expect that out of Porcello. This is my point. Like, when you look at Rick Porcello's career in Boston, you know what his average season is?
He's a 4 ERA guy.
14-12, 4.17, which is exactly what he is. That's exactly what he is. And you can say, well, they're paying him $20 million. $20 million doesn't buy you what he used to. Yep. $20 million is a number three starter now. That's what it is. And that's what Rick Porcello is. He's a number three starter who will basically go .500, basically have an average ERA, and he will give you 200 innings. During his Red Sox career, he's averaged 199. Okay, so he has given them exactly what he should. I have no issue, really, in the big picture with Rick Porcello. The last couple of games have been rancid, absolutely putrid. But that's who he is in the big picture. He will end up where he's supposed to be. I look at the rotation, though, now, and I say, is it good enough to beat Houston? Is it good enough to beat the Yankees? And I'm not telling you I think the Red Sox all of a sudden have to go out and do something drastic. But I'm telling you the fact that it feels like there's a hole in the rotation is about Price. It's not about Porcello. It's still about David Price. And if David Price doesn't pitch well, how are you going to fill that hole? Your team is built on the rotation. And it's built on everyone being slotted properly. If you start asking Porcello to do more than he should, or Pomeranz to do more than he should, or Eduardo Rodriguez, any of those guys, all of a sudden, the whole thing gets out of whack. To me, if Price doesn't get his act together, he's going to really put them in a bind at the trade deadline.
So since they started out 17-2, they're now 11-11, I think. Is that right, Jimmy? That's what it's 11-11 since that 17-2 start?
That
that's
is
exactly
correct.
Right.
Just your thought on that.
So the 11-11 in and of itself doesn't alarm me, because teams are going to play 500 over long stretches of time. Those bursts are ultimately what are going to determine what you are over the course of a full season. So the 11-11 in and of itself, again, doesn't bother me. How they've played during large stretches of that has alarmed me. Bad base running, bad defense. The starting pitching has failed them in some areas. The eighth inning in the bullpen. For a team with a $230 million payroll, that feels like a lot of holes. That's all. So I look at it and I say, Devers is launching grenades into the seats every other game. You don't have a, you can't have a series with them running the bases clean. The starting pitching, again, feels a little skittish at the moment. And I think a lot of that has to do with Price, you know, basically begging out of the rotation for the series in New York and then not being good for a solid month or so. Like, I don't love the way it's going right now. I don't.
Okay, plenty of hoops today. Wick Grosbeck will join us later in the 3 o'clock hour. We've started Red Sox. Join us on whatever you please, and we'll get to you right after these words.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Every afternoon, Felger and Mass bring you the science of sports.
Stupid me.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
And a high twisting fly ball, pretty well hit on the run. Benintendi to the track, headed for the wall. He can't get it. Another run is in. It bounces back to Martinez, rounding second. Fowler, he is into third with a triple to make it 4-2.
Benintendi running out of room. It's third RBI out of the 8-9 hole right there. Two for Lucroy and one for Fowler's. And the lineup flips over right here to the leadoff guy.
Okay, so there's that Andrew Benintendi play in center field. I didn't like it.
I mean, that was the big inning in the game, right? They had just gone ahead 2-1. They go back out there. They give up three runs in that inning. They never get the lead back. I mean, to me, that was the big inning in the game.
So I don't mean to make, you know, I don't like it's like blaming Andrew Benintendi. It's just my leadoff thought because, again, I've heard you guys on the Baseball Reporters get on Benintendi a little bit. And last night I felt it for the first time. I did. I'm like, yeah, that's how you're going to go after that ball? In center field, and then he leaves guys on second and third, nobody out, with a weak at bat. Later, I'm like, I sort of get it. All right, two thoughts, as promised. Here's George in Rhode Island. Hi, George.
Yeah, how are you doing, guys? Hey,
good, George.
While I was waiting for you to take my call, I heard something that Robinson Cano got busted with PEDs.
Is that true? Yep, he just got popped 80 games.
Is that
he's
true?
On the DL. Does that stop before he goes off the DL or after he comes back from the
he's
DL?
He's got to wait till he's off, from what I understand.
That's my understanding,
and he
can't
too. Can't play in the postseason either, correct?
I think that is right.
Is that right?
If you get popped during a season, you cannot play in that postseason. Remember they changed that rule? I don't remember.
Whatever.
Yeah, but they changed the rule. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, he's stupid enough to play for the Red Sox, I'm telling you.
What else you got, George?
I was thinking about Benintendi. He put on a lot of weight over the off season so he could be a power hitter, and now he's trying to jerk everything, you know, and instead of going to all fields. And I think that's why his average is down, his power is down.
Do you agree with that, Maz? Thanks for the call, George.
Oh, yeah, no. It's worked like a charm. He's got two home runs. After a quarter of the season, he's on pace for like eight. That's fabulous. So, look, I know he's trying to get stronger, but this is my concern with him as a player from the day he got here, that I don't know if he's going to hit for power consistently, and you're better off having a guy. If he's going to be this, then you're better off having him hit 310 with 13 homers and hit a bunch of doubles to left center field. Because I think he can hit for a pretty high average. You know, when he came up, he was the kind of guy that would spray the ball around a little bit. It was nice to see. Now it doesn't feel like he does a ton of that.
Woody and Melrose, what stood out to you last night?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Good, good. Yeah, so I'm just calling another one on the Red Sox. I'm calling about Blake Swihart. Maybe you guys can help me understand why he's in the lineup. I mean, he can't hit. He's hitting under 200 here. And you got Moreland sitting on the bench when, you know, he could be DH'ing just as well. I mean, obviously way better. I mean, Moreland's been ripping the cover off the ball. I'm just at a loss for why, you know, Moreland's on the bench and we got
Swihart in there. Thanks for the call, Woody. Let me follow this up. Nick in the car, you agree?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was at the game last night. I don't know what Cora was doing there. I'm looking for you guys to help me out. I mean, Swihart was terrible at the plate. And then the eighth inning, did they pinch hit him? No, he goes 0-for-4. And then Leon, who has a hit and then he reaches on an error, he gets pinch hit for Moreland in the ninth, and that's too little too late to me. So I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, so it's a left-right thing. Mineta's lefty.
Yeah,
right?
He's a lefty. Yeah, Mineta's a lefty. Yeah.
Swihart switch hitters, switch hits, and even though, you know, Swihart's much worse on the right side, right?
Yes.
I mean, to me, I'm okay with him playing him. To me,
so am I.
Either play him or get him out of here. Like, I mean, I feel like he's just burning a roster spot.
But I mean, I feel
he was bad last night. Big double play at one point in the middle of the game that he grounded into.
What was that? Ultimately 0-for-4 with a couple of strikeouts, too, and a double play. Right? I mean, it was brutal. Brutal. But I don't blame him. And I'll tell, because I feel like they've jerked that guy around six ways to Sunday since the day they brought him up to the big leagues. And even now, they're still jerking him around. When's the last time he played? So you drop him in against a guy you have a no-hit, that no-hit you know, 3 weeks ago, and you make him hit from his worst side? And you expect him, what, to go 3-for-4 with two homers? Is that what you're looking for? So I just think they've screwed that kid into the ground. I think they've completely messed him up.
617-779-0985. Maz's buddy, Alex in Newton. Hi, Alex.
Hey, Maz, first of all, I want to commend you. You're getting a lot better at saying Mookie Betts and not Mookie Betts. So I'm giving you that compliment. You're doing well.
I appreciate that, Alex.
One of the previous callers kind of got to what I wanted to say in terms of Benintendi gaining all this weight. And, Maz, I don't know if you said it was him choosing to do that, but from what I heard, it's the Red Sox asking him to do that, which I think is asinine. I think that's crazy. I think just because he hit a bunch of home runs in college, and by the way, if you'll remember, his first year in college, he didn't hit many. And then his next year, he hit a crap load. And I think he got really attracted to just hitting a bunch of home runs, and I think it's totally screwing him up. And just lastly, any player who's struggling like this, normally you would just move them down in the order. But unfortunately, Cora really doesn't have that leeway because this lineup is so righty-dependent. The two best hitters are right-handed hitters. So normally you just move Benintendi down. But if you do that, you move Bogarts up, you have righty, 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 righty. So it's really a sticky situation, in my opinion. I just wanted to get your thought on it.
Yeah, well, Pedroia has a rehab start last night. What do you do when he comes back? Because, I mean, he should go up and Benintendi should go down. But as the caller said, and you're right, 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 right.
Yeah, I don't think you worry about the right, 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 left, left, left thing. I don't.
I mean, they do.
Well, not Cora as much. Not Cora as much. I mean, it felt like Farrell did. It doesn't feel to me like Cora's is married to it. And so I think a lot of it depends on how Benintendi plays. If he starts hitting, you leave him at two, you hit Pedroia seventh. If he doesn't, you put Pedroia second. Because the righties at the top of their lineup hit righties. In fact, they're 5-5 against left-handed pitching now. I mean, it really, it's almost ass backwards with this lineup, given what they've got. All their righties pound left-handed pitching historically, but they're bad against lefties this year. They have like the lowest, second lowest OPS in the American League against left-handed pitching. It makes no sense.
Right.
Zero. So, to me, all their righties can hit righties. Hanley can, J.D. Martinez can, Bogarts can, Betts certainly can. Like, I look at him and say, I'm not worried about that part of it. What I want is Benintendi to hit, period.
Dennis in New Bedford, what do you got for us?
Hello, guys. Long time listening to the show. I just want to talk about our catching situation, and I think it's so bad right now. We're pretty much like a National League team with either Bradley or Vasquez batting 8th or 9th, whatever way they decide to go. But I just want to know what you guys think when Pedroia comes back. Should we bat him 9th? I mean, Vasquez got maybe 8 runs scored on the year, batting behind the hottest hitter on the planet. So just want to know you guys' thoughts on that.
Right. How much should they accept? You know, again, this is now the new commentary coming out that teams are supposed to accept a black hole at catcher because it's a defensive position, and if they manage the pitching staff well, it weighs out and it balances out. Is that just something that's written when you have a bad catcher?
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, you can't have an automatic out there the way they've had it all year long. I mean, there is a representative number there. You got to get a, you know, I mean, I always throw 250 out as a number. Averages are a little lower this year so far. So, I don't know, 240. You got to get that. You can't get what they're getting now, especially if you're not going to get the truly elite gold glove caliber defense and, you know, a deterrent on base stealing and all that other stuff. So, but, you know, they're married to Vasquez now. They signed him to the extension before the year. Like, so they invested money in the kid. Like, and, you know, not that it's a crap ton of dough, but it averaged out to what, $5 million a year? Like, they clearly thought he was the guy, and I think they overestimated his offense from a year ago.
Patrick in Westford, what do you got for us?
Yeah, Maz, I was wondering if you think, I know Benintendi has showed a lack of effort recently. I was wondering if you think Hanley Romero, someone like him, when he dogs it, kind of an influence on him. Just, I'll hang up and listen to your answer. Thanks.
Okay, do you think Hanley's being a positive influence or a negative influence on this team?
Positive.
I mean, me too. And I've been as big of a Hanley basher as there is, but he hasn't been a problem. He hasn't been a problem in a while.
No.
I mean, now that I think of it, I mean, he hit poorly last year, but I, you know, I didn't see that horrible body language and just, you know, the Hanley dog thing. I haven't seen that in a little bit.
He's out there every day. The defense has been fine. I mean, I'm not telling he's a gold glover, but he's not making stupid mistakes with any sort of regularity. He's had some big hits for them this year. Now, he went to a little hole there in the middle where he didn't deliver power, but his hits have been big hits. Early in the year, he won the game here. He won the game in Miami. He had a big home run in New York. Like, there have been a lot of big hits for Hanley this year. I have no issue with him. My issue is with Benintendi. Okay, this guy's only been in the big leagues for a year and a half. He's got a lot to prove still. He's acting like he's a 10-year vet.
Yeah, and one of the things that you pointed out, and Jimmy Stewart back in Brighton, maybe you could pop the audio, was him whining after the hit that he didn't get in the no-hitter?
Right, so this goes back to the game in Oakland that Manaea also pitched, and Benintendi was one of the two guys that had a chance at a hit in that game. He had a dribbler up the first baseline. He avoided the tag, slid into the base, and touched it with his hand, and initially they called him safe. They then reviewed it, called him out, or the umpire then called him out of the baseline, and after the game, here's what he said.
I don't know. I've never seen that call before. Kind of suspect in that situation. No, it sucks. It's a big league hit, and they don't grow on trees.
Could it go over that play?
Hit a soft dribbler to first and was starting to get out of the baseline a little bit, more like a rounded, but I was still within the baseline. A guy picked it up and made a move around him and was able to reach and touch the base, and they called me out of the baseline.
You thought it was a bad call, right?
I've never seen that call before, and that, I mean, I think if we have 10 hits at that point, it's a single. The situation that the game was in, and I mean, they might have been searching for something, and they found it.
The fact that you were initially saved,
it's usually if you're going to second base and you're on the baseline, the play's dead. And but I touched the base, guy called me safe, and then they huddle as a group and make the call. So I've never seen it before. It's
okay, Jim. That's enough.
Yeah. So the whole idea that, you know, I've never seen it before. What, in your year and a half? In your year and a half, you've never seen it before? And then secondly, big league hits don't grow on trees? Shut up. Seriously, put a sock in it already, would you? They don't. So is it about you getting the hit? Or is it about the no-hitter? Or who cares? You didn't win the game. Shut up. So, and the thing I find most offensive about him as a player is the base running. It really, his base running is wretched. It is awful. And for a guy that has, again, clearly has an understanding of how the game is played, he's got a nice swing. Like, you think there are instincts there with him. And then he runs the bases like that? I can only come to one conclusion when I look at his tools and his ability. The only conclusion I can come to is that he's got his head up his butt.
All right, folks, we've decided to start Red Sox today. Today's target. Not hard to figure out who we're targeting. We'll get to start to mix in some Celtics as well. Wick Grosbeck, Celtics owner, will join us in the 3 o'clock hour here from our Garden Studios. Also, a year ago at this time, what happened a year ago at this time, folks? Very big day in Boston sports history. All that coming up right after Murray's update.
Felger and Maz, the Sports Hub.
It's game day for the Celtics. The NBA playoffs play here. Felger and Maz are in the Star Market studio on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
As promised, right back to the phones. You can join us at 617 779-0985. Scott in Connecticut on the Sox last night. Hi, Scott.
What's up, boys? How you doing?
Good.
I have Ben Intendi to talk to you guys about this. Okay, Swihart goes 0 for 4 because he plays once a month. By the way, there's three guys on the roster that go 0 for 4 and strike out twice every single game. Maybe we should address that. Once Pedroia comes back, something needs to happen. I know we keep harping on this, but once Pedroia comes back, something needs to happen. Who's it going to be?
And you're talking about the two guys that do that every night are the catchers.
Yes.
Bradley
and the catcher.
So, I mean, would you still catch Swihart at this point, Maz, or is that just...
No, far? I would. I would give it a shot against, you know, pick your spots a little bit. Like, so look, they clearly don't trust him. They clearly don't.
I don't even remember. Was he that bad defensively? With pickoffs?
Who knows?
Yeah, it was so long ago, Mari. What I remember is that he can hit.
Right, well, that's the only thing that I knew, too.
So, and they're still working with him behind the plate. I mean, he caught last year in the minors.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'd heard last night on the broadcast that Veritek is still working with him in the bullpen all the time. So, like, I look at it and say, well, if he's here, they should use him. So pick him against a weaker opponent if you have to, and maybe with a starter who is a little more on the veteran side, and put him back there and see what you got. Okay, just try, can we try it for a game? Or put him in left field, or give him some at-bats, like just so we can get an idea of what the hell the guy is. And I don't know, maybe they're terrified of him being hurt because he's about the only trade chip they have at the moment that would have any sort of value to a team that's looking for a young player. But I'm at a loss to understand, other than carrying him and protecting him to deal him, why he's on the roster at all.
The caller's other question about Pedroia when he comes back. What do you do?
You mean who goes out?
Yeah, what do you do with your lineup? What do you do with, yeah, the whole thing?
I mean, I would put, I told you, I would hit Pedroia second or seventh is what I would do depending on. I mean,
that's a big swing there, Tonto.
Well, but it's one of those two spots. Because to me, it depends on how Benintendi's playing. So if Benintendi's playing poorly, I put Pedroia right back into his two spot. That's where he's traditionally been his whole career. And I still think he can function in that position and be an asset to the lineup. If Benintendi is hitting, then I tell Pedroia.
Okay, right now, that Pedroia's ready tonight.
But second.
Benintendi's not hitting. Benintendi drops to seventh.
Yep, that's exactly what I
do. And you don't care about too many right-handers at the top of your lineup.
I don't. Not with this team, I don't. Nope. And so to me, I also wouldn't mind Benintendi sending him a little bit of a message given the way he's played thus far. And then in terms of the roster composition, I don't know why Brock Holt is here. I mean, you can have Brock Holt. I would have traded his ass at the end of spring training. But to me, they'll come up with some sort of phantom injury, and Nunez will become the right-handed bat on the bench that they clearly need.
Wally in Fall River. Hi, Wally.
Yeah, what's up, guys? I mean, you look at all these relievers that are coming back. How do you sort them out? You got Stephen Wright, Don, but who do you keep? You really don't have nobody defined in your seventh and eighth inning spots like the Yankees do in other teams. As far as Swihart, you just got to get rid of the guy. I mean, you're not going to get much for him. I mean, you've got absolutely no punch at the bottom of the order. You look at Gary Sanchez of the Yankees. He's got more home runs, extra bases, I think, than the bottom three guys in our lineup. But they're putting too much of an emphasis on defense. You have to get more offense from the bottom of that lineup.
Okay. That's not according to the Red Sox beat writers. When you have a sucky catcher and you want to cover for the team, you say offense doesn't matter at the catching position. Yeah. Like, that's the new thing now. That's the new advanced thought on catcher. It's always been that way.
I mean, it hasn't really bitten them in the ass yet.
No.
They're 28 and 13, right? So it's not like it's bitten them in the ass. But there are certain positions you look at and you say, those guys just aren't playing well. I mean, offensively, they're getting squat out of catcher. And Bradley's been a complete zero in center field. So you'd like to think, offensively, so you'd like to think there are a couple of spots that you could get better performance out of. Because when those other ones go cold, like, heaven forbid anything happened to Mookie or J.D. Martinez. Because then all of a sudden you look at that lineup and say, well, what do you really have here? Like, you know, there's a lot on those two guys, and they've been dynamite here in the early part of the year. Betts in particular, because he's been wire to wire. But it's not a bad thing to have nine guys going at the same time. It's okay.
Yeah, and on Wally's point about the bullpen, are you worried about what we're going to do with all the bullpen arms?
No.
That's hardly the issue.
So
you're
going
to find one or two guys who can pitch.
So to me, the big thing is the eighth inning. Because I think the seventh inning thing, you know, it's an easier solution. whether it's one of the guys getting hot and you ride the hot hand, or you want to match up in the seventh, you can get away with that sometimes, depending on the skill of the manager and the teams you're playing. But they don't have an eighth inning guy.
Yeah, right now, it's spin the wheel of suck.
Yeah, absolutely, Murray.
And Stephen Wright doesn't solve any of that.
No.
He's a mop-up guy and a, you know, long
correct.
Guy.
Yeah. I mean, he's a spot starter is what he is. Absolutely.
Okay, we continue with your thoughts on the Red Sox at 617-779-0985. Again, Wick Grosbeck will join us in the 3 o'clock hour as well. Get his thoughts on Celtics-Cavs. We'll start to mix in your thoughts on Celtics-Cavs and basketball-related. A year ago tonight, probably doesn't match up exactly. It was probably a year ago yesterday or a year ago tomorrow. Either way, just about a year ago, big thing happened to the Boston Celtics and in Boston sports. We will relive it and reset it for this year because it is another year. And it's always a fun night. So I'll tell you what I'm talking about in our long commercial-free segment right after this. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
If you get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
Sorry I brought it up.
Felger and Mez, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
But here's the thing. This is the pick right here coming up. Because if the Celtics get three, that means Fultz and Ball are off the board. You're okay with that?
Yeah, can I get Josh Jackson?
Okay.
I get Josh Jackson or Tatum. I'm okay with that.
All right.
But I prefer Fultz.
Here we go.
All right,
here we go.
Here we go.
Here we go.
We're going back right now. We'll let you know. Sherrod has all the details.
Right.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go!
Lakers and Celtics.
Let's go!
What I tell y'all, Dave? I told y'all this place is nuts. This place is nuts. Wow.
Oh, my gosh. The number one overall pick to the Boston Celtics. Oh, my gosh. Unbelievable.
That was a year ago tomorrow. It was the 16th of May, 2017. You were listening to... And I put this word in quotations. The coverage on NBC Sports Boston. Brian Scalabrine and Kyle Draper, and I think A'Sherrod Blakely on the desk as well. Again, covering the draft lottery in which the Celtics gained the first overall pick. And it is fun to go back and hear Scal, among others. It's Fultz. I prefer Fultz, but I'll take Jackson or Tatum. You know, like...
Oh, and then they get the number one pick, and he goes, we got Fultz!
We got Fultz! Exactly. When they get the pick, he says, we got Fultz. And now all these green teamers with their pants off about, bleh, look at how dumb the Sixers are. Bleh. Like, make commercials of you people. We can go back and grab all your commentary.
Totally.
When you got the first deleted, Mike.
Yeah, going, you know, good God. Well, we got Fultz, baby! Oh, God, way to go. Way to just keep it right down the middle, fellas. But anyways, that was a year ago tomorrow.
It was a fun night.
That was fun. That was pretty good. That
no
was a
more porking by the ping pong.
So here we go again. The draft lottery back at it tonight.
That's exactly right.
And you still have a shot to do something special. Not quite like last night. But here are your odds, okay? You still have a skin in this game. You basically have a 2.9% chance of getting the second or third overall pick. Okay, you can't get the first overall pick because in your trade with the Sixers, it was number one protected.
Correct.
Okay, so what the Sixers dealt you to move up from 3-1 to get Fultz was the Lakers' first overall pick. Okay, we all know this now. The Lakers finished with the 10th worst record, so they're sitting in the number 10 lottery position, which means the Lakers have a 1.1% chance, i.e. the Sixers have a 1.1% chance of landing number one, which would not convey to you. The Sixers would keep it if it's number one overall. If they somehow jump to number two or three, you get it.
You get it? They can't jump to any. They can't jump to 4, 5, 6. They can only jump to 1, 2, or 3. 1, you don't get. 2 or 3, you do. There is a 2.9% chance that you get that.
Wouldn't that be something after all the years of getting porked in the lottery if they actually jumped up and ended up in two, you know, the 2 to 3 area?
Come through on that one?
Be unbelievable.
Holy moly.
And this is the draft to do it.
Okay, why?
Because this is this draft is deep and deep with big men at the top of this draft. So, again, and I'm just looking at NBADraft.net, which does these updated, draft projections all the time. And I'm not even going to give you the names, but the heights of the first 6 players, 7 foot, then 6'8", then 6'11", 6'11", 6'10", 6'10", and the 8th pick is 7 feet. So you got 6 out of the top 8 picks in the draft being 6'10 to 7 feet. I mean, this is a big man draft. And if you're going to get picky with the Celtics and say the one thing they lack is a young big man, that's what they lack. They lack a true young big man, and there's a truckload of them at the high end of this draft.
So what would hurt is if somehow they get the number one. And, that was our big second guess last year. Why did you have to trade away the number one? Like, why couldn't you give yourself a chance at that number one? Now, it turned out the Lakers weren't quite as bad as people thought, and, they only have a 1% chance anyway. So they dealt away a 1.1% chance at first overall. But that was really, like, the second guess. Like, you don't think Philly would have made that deal if you had taken that first overall protection off of it?
I mean, I hated that at the time. I hated it. And so, look, if the Celtics will tell you that they couldn't make the deal without it. But to me, it feels like on that one, you got to dig in a little. What's the point of moving down? You're giving them the number one pick in this year's draft. You should have the chance of getting it back the next one.
Albeit however small. So that is that'll sting a little bit.
Oh.
If somehow they hit that 1.1% chance. Then there's a 2.9% chance you get it. So you're still running, but there's a 97% chance you're going to stay at 10, or that pick's going to stay at 10, 11, 13, which means it does not convey to you.
I mean, right, and I know you touch on this, but just to amplify it, the nightmare scenario is that it goes to one and Philly gets it.
Right, exactly.
I mean, Philly gets it.
That's right.
It's a killer.
That's right.
But anyway, go ahead.
Okay, so it only conveys you if it's the 2 or the 3. If it stays where it is, you're going to get Sacramento's pick instead next year. Okay, Sacramento through Philly. Same deal, right?
Yes.
How's Sacramento going to be next year? Sacramento tonight is in the 7th lottery position, the 7th worst record. They're going to get better, aren't they? Aren't they a young, developing team? Haven't they been drafting up high the last couple of years? I mean, what?
See, I still think they're going to be one of the worst teams in the league.
Well, define that.
One of the 5 worst teams in the league.
Okay, well, they were 7 this year. You think they're going to get worse?
Yes.
They do.
Why? How? Explain, please.
So who are the teams at the bottom? Is Phoenix one of them?
Yeah.
See, I think Phoenix has a chance of being better than Sacramento next year. So that's one team that I think will overtake them. And then, I'd have to go through.
Go ahead. I'll get it. Just yammer.
Okay. So Phoenix is one right off the top that
Memphis
I look at.
Has the number 2 pick this year. They're going to be better because they're going to be healthy with Conley and Marcus Gasol back in the picture for them.
Okay. Phoenix, Memphis, Dallas, Atlanta, Orlando, Chicago. These are the teams ahead of Sacramento right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. I just think Sacramento is going to blow. That's going to be a really bad team again. So you should be somewhere in that top 5 area.
Okay, so again, it is it's number 1 protected.
See, that again, that part sucks.
It's number 1, so you still can't get to 1. However, next year the lottery formula changes.
Correct.
They've had lottery reform, Murray. Lottery reform. And right now the team with the worst record has a 25% chance, and then it scales down from there, 25 to 19 to 13.8 to 13.7. What they're doing next year is that they're going to give the bottom 3 teams all the same percentage, much lower at 14. So teams 1, 2, and 3, the 3 worst teams, will have a 14% chance, and then scaling down from team 4 all the way down to team 14, it'll go from 12.5% to 10.5% to 9% to 7% to 6% to blah, 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 blah. Is that better or worse for the Celtics? Without giving me a screaming popsicle headache, is that better or worse for the Celtics? Do you have a short answer for me, Jimmy Stewart or Maz?
I mean, I'd say worse.
Just because
I would say it's better because it gives you an 86% chance of getting this Kings pick.
And I don't know because I'm not going to try to figure out the math.
No, I'll tell you why I think it's worse. Because if Sacramento finishes with the 3rd worst record in the league,
they have a better chance of getting 1, which you don't get.
Exactly. And so you don't want 1. You can't get 1. That doesn't do you any good. So you would want it weighted in favor of the worst team in the league. Like, now, look, if Sacramento finishes with the worst record, I suppose it hurts them, but I don't know if they're quite that bad.
Well, so
basically, if you're looking at it the way you do, and I don't, I hope this is not confusing people. I know Murray's already lost, you know, reaching for his vape right now. But
yeah, percentages and Madley, get out of here.
Right, please. Now, the 1-2 team, number Phoenix has a 25% chance, and the second worst team, Memphis, has a 19% chance. So if Sacramento finishes with the worst or the second worst record, this new format actually helps you.
Correct. Correct.
Right? You see what I'm saying? Because right. They'll have less of a chance of finishing number one overall.
Right.
Which wouldn't convey to you. You want them to finish two. You know, what are their best chances of finishing at two? So, I don't know. Maybe it definitely takes someone smarter than me to figure that out.
So the other thing to me is that, and this is probably the bigger factor, I just think next year's draft sucks. It sucks.
What about Zion Williamson?
Yeah. I mean, he's getting a lot of hype, Murray. The thing I'm looking at now projects him at number five, and I did a little sniffing around this morning. I made a couple of phone calls.
Oh.
And I'm told the top two players in next year's draft are this kid, R.J. Barrett, who's 6'6", he's going to Duke, and Cameron Reddish, who's 6'7", who's also going to Duke. And neither one of them is even remotely in the same class as the players at the top of this draft. That in the case of Barrett, he can't shoot, and the other kid is lazy. So there are players at the top of the draft, but that next year's draft is bad compared to this one.
And this one's a heavy hitter draft.
Yes, so this was the one to be in. This is why I felt like, you know, if we go back to the Kyrie deal, sending that Brooklyn pick instead of the Sacramento, what will be the Sacramento pick, that's a big trade there. I mean, that's a big swap for the Celtics, a big drop for the Celtics, because you want to be in this draft.
Oh, I feel every year it's this is the draft.
I know,
this
right?
is the guy. That's what it was last year with Markelle Fultz. Look what he's turned into. And even Ben Simmons a few years ago. The shine comes off all of these guys. So keep talking about DeAndre Ayton and his 7-foot wingspan, and he's 7-foot, and he's going to be the best big in a while. Yeah, and him and his team couldn't beat Buffalo in the first round. A 4-seed lost to a 13. He was part of it. No thanks.
Okay,
another antiquated big.
But you weren't going to get Ayton anyway, because Ayton's going number one. He's
well,
gonna be,
good luck, Phoenix.
So he's going to go number one. You're not getting him because you're not getting that pick. So you're getting anyone 2 through 5, and there's players in there. And so the, you know what I mean? There's just a better chance of hitting on those guys than there are in the next draft.
Okay, well, that's the deal. You still got a shot tonight, Celtics fans. The way things have gone for you, I'd pay attention. 2.9%. That's not zero.
I mean, I'm paying attention. And the other thing is, where did the Lakers end up again? 10th worst?
Yep.
Yeah.
So when they get to 10,
if they're not there, you're in.
If the Lakers aren't there, you're in the top three.
Or the Lakers could actually drop two if someone else jumps them. So you start looking at 13, okay? Is it 12 then? You start looking at 12, right?
Correct.
Because three teams could jump them. There's three teams, you know, the lottery is 1, 2, and 3. So the Lakers are going to be anywhere from 10, 11, or 12. So you start looking in that 13, 12 range, and if the Lakers don't land in there, then you just got yourself into the lottery pick.
Absolutely right. Once they flip that number 10 card, if the Lakers haven't turned up yet, you're in the top three.
And where are Kyle and Scal going to be tonight? Do we know?
With their pants off somewhere.
Because that thing? Holy cow. That thing was embarrassing. That thing was embarrassing.
We were far more under control last year where we were.
Where we were?
Well, you weren't there.
Oh, yes, I wasn't.
Another invite you blew off.
Who the hell knows where I was? The NBC sports people never have any reason to ever say one thing about Nesson and how embarrassed, what homers they are. You've lost your right out there with this and so many other things.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.